Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice. There's a pretty good chance that if someone mentioned the song But It's All Right by J.J. Jackson, you would say, how does that one go? The second you heard the iconic opening guitar riff, however, you'd undoubtedly say, oh, of course I know this one. This week, we're joined by A.J. Santini to discuss this soulful 60s belter and try to figure out why this big guy, 285 pounds to be exact, as made clear in the liner notes of his record, isn't a bigger name.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, so AJ, you chose J.J. Jackson, and when Matt told me which song we were doing, I was like, what is that song? And he was like, you're going to know it. And then within, I would say, half a second, I was like, oh, yeah, this song, which is how I feel most people listening to this will be once they realize what this song is. And I was surprised that it was a one-hit wonder, and I was also surprised that this song was not actually released on Motown. I would have assumed this was a Motown hit.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. AJ, what made you decide to pick this song?
I think based on, I always get excited when there's an older one-hit wonder that gets chosen for the show. I feel like, you know, when the show started out and I was listening to some of the podcasts and seeing what guests were picking, it was things that were like relevant in their lifetime, which is always great, you know. So it was a lot of like 90s and 2000s and 80s. But I'm a big fan of like a lot of old soul. I love like Motown, Stax, Atlantic Soul records. The more I dug into it, I found these like obscure pockets of culture that like really listen to, dig out, and dance to obscure even songs from a lot of these artists. So like I liked the fact that J.J. Jackson, like this song is a popular soul song, but he's got other songs that are popular within certain subcultures of people and like music fans, but the regular people have no idea who he is.
This song has one of the most iconic guitar riffs right off the top. That is got to be one of the most recognizable and memorable 60s guitar riffs.
I actually pulled a quote from AllMusic. AllMusic described the song as being driven by one of the catchiest guitar hooks in the history of rock and roll and having a absolutely devastating vocal performance.
That's good. That's a good call, because his delivery, like, I saw that he was known as a belter. Now, I've never heard of that as being like a technical term, but that's actually belting as a technique of singing is actually a thing. And it's characterized by singing with the chest voice above the breaking point with a proportion of head voice. Basically, it's described as a high chest voice, and if it's done incorrectly, it can shred your vocal cords if you do it wrong. And I know that a lot of people within the punk rock world and whatever you want to call it sing. I think I do it. I think it's just very common in our world. But when it's done in soul and, you know, in the world of Motown and stuff, it's so cool. This guy has such an awesome delivery, especially in this song.
And it is that thing where I'm glad that you made that comparison too to like the punk rock and even, you know, in the 2000s, it was like the metalcore scene, because a lot of those dudes did not know the proper way to protect their vocal cords while screaming into a microphone. And a lot of those artists now, you check out their music and the vocalist sounds way different now than they did when they were a kid because of that. You know, I think that JJ continued, I mean, he kind of disappeared from music for a bit, but he came back in the 90s and 2000s doing oldies tours. And from what I read, he sounded just the same because he had the proper vocal control.
Wait a second, he did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was part, so
what? It's funny that I had it marked down that he died in 1982. which must be wrong then.
That must be wrong. Yeah,
he died in 1982 and was taken over by JJ Jackson on MTV.
From MTV.
That's what it was. The VJ. Yeah.
Are you sure now, that's not who was on those tours?
I don't know. It said in the late 90s into the 2000s, he performed on multiple oldies tours with people like Chuck Berry, Bobby Boris Pickett, and Otis Day.
Oh, you're right. He's alive. I had his year that he was born, right? I had he was born in 1942 and died in 1982. But no, don't worry, everybody. He's still alive. He's age 79 and apparently doing these sorts of tours. So that's good news, man. I'm psyched. I thought he died at 40.
Obscure soul Twitter just went nuts over here.
Yeah. I thought he died at 40 years old and that was going to be part of my conversation. It's like, what a bummer it was. But yeah. Wow, this is happy news. Thanks, man.
Yeah. He also was, before he did solo music, he was a songwriter, and he didn't really write a ton of hits, but he wrote songs for like the Shangri-Las, Mary Wells, yeah. Billy Williams, like a lot of these big 50s and 60s artists that had a fair amount of notoriety. One of the things that I saw him called out on Wikipedia, they said he was one of the most interestingly obscure figures of the 60s soul movement.
There's so much to talk about with this guy, but one of the things I want to talk about is who he wrote this song with was a fella named Pierre Tubbs, whose other famous, you know, claim to fame is that he co-wrote the Maxine Nightingale hit Right Back Where We Started mm-hmm. From. Which that's yeah. another one, which you know what that song is, right, guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that one also starts with, and it's all right, and I wanna
get right back to where we started from.
That is a jam, but it made me think, like, saying all right or putting all right in your lyrics, it seemed to be the key to having a hit. So I went through and found throughout the history of music the hit songs that had the word all right in them. And it made me want to, after we finish this podcast today, write a song with all right in the title, because I would love,
nice.
I would love to be part of this history, because the earliest one I saw, and I'm sure there are earlier ones than this, but as far as hits, was the Rolling Stones had I'm All Right in 1965.
You got to start with Elvis Presley's first breakthrough. That's All Right, Mama.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I don't even know that one.
Oh, that's All Right, Mama was like what got Elvis signed to a major label, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
another check in the column.
There you go.
Rolling Stones in 65.
Great one.
Maybe my favorite one, and there are a lot of good ones on this list, but in 1966, Stevie Wonder had Uptight, Everything's All Right.
Everything's All Right, yeah.
Dude, that is seriously one of my favorite songs of all time. That is just a short, to the point, just song that raises your spirits, as does this song, which a year later, It's All Right from JJ Jackson came out, which surprisingly was released twice, which I thought was really cool.
And charted both times, which is also kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was originally a B-side.
Yeah.
So it originally was the B-side of a song called Boogaloo Baby, or it had got to Boogaloo or whatever was the original title. And the DJ flipped it over and was like, well, this song's way better. Let's play this. and got that, you know, But It's All Right charting. And then they re-released it as a single and then re-released it. That was 67. And then re-released it in 69.
Yeah.
And it charted both times. That's crazy.
This song is way better than Boogaloo Baby. I checked out Boogaloo Baby. This song's way better.
The DJ made the right call on that one, you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, Boogaloo Baby sounds like a ripoff of Marvin Gaye, Ain't That Peculiar. It's got the same like piano start, maybe one note's different in the run, but I put it on. I was like, this sounds like Marvin Gaye. Like, Marvin Gaye's family is going to retroactively sue J.J. Jackson. They're next on the list after Pharrell, I think.
Hey, I got to tell you the rest of the songs with All Right.
Oh yeah.
Can I guess one that I really hope is on there in the 90s? Did Supergrass make the cut?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
Supergrass' best song.
Yeah.
I love that song. I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins from the Caddyshack soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which sounds like Tusk from Fleetwood Mac, honestly.
It does, yeah.
All Right by Janet Jackson, which is a great great underrated Janet Jackson song.
That's with a Heavy D on that one?
I don't think so. I don't think it's Heavy D. But
anyway, go ahead.
But I could be wrong.
I keep cutting you off, Chris. I'm sorry.
It's okay. One of my favorite Kendrick Lamar songs, All Right. Amazing song.
Mm.
Jamiroquai had an All Right, which is a decent song. Christopher Cross had an All Right, which is okay. The Kids Are All Right by The Who.
The Who.
Everything Is All Right by Motion City Soundtrack. All Right Now by Free.
Yeah,
that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Gonna Be All Right by Jennifer Lopez featuring Nas.
Okay.
Be All Right by Ariana Grande. And one that I thought was a really cool one, maybe forgotten, but everyone knows this one. Be All Right by Zapp. Now, you might not know, listeners, what that is, but it's basically all the music for Tupac's Keep Your Head Up.
Yes.
Also, I think AJ and I both Googled the same thing. All Right was remixed with Heavy D by Janet Jackson.
Gotcha.
But also, I mean, if you're going to do The Kids Are All Right by The Who, you got to also throw Offspring's The Kids Aren't All Right, which was the theme song to The Faculty.
I made a conscious choice to leave that one off, but but I'm glad you brought it.
I know you're like after Smash, Offspring died for you, where I'm like, no, X Day for the Hombre and Americana is solid record.
If you take Pretty Fly for a White Guy and the Obla Di Obla Da remake off of Americana, that's a solid record.
Yeah, it's just got two big hits that suck. But here's a question for you, though. If someone tells you that they're all right, do you think that they are? Or do you think that that's like the same as someone being like, hey, I'm fine? Where you're like, oh, they're not okay.
Like F-I-N-E fine? Like fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional?
Yes.
I think all right in general means that I don't feel like talking about it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I'm all right.
That's what I mean. It makes me wonder, like, this song is kind of like, you know, heralded as like a moving on after a breakup song. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't associate the word all right with moving on. I associate all right with like you said, I just don't want to talk about it right now.
But what if he's Matthew McConaughey and he says it three times?
Well, then it's a totally different situation.
Three times is a whole other story.
All right.
This is an interesting song because it's so uplifting, and you could easily, as I have my entire life, every time I heard this song, listen to it and just enjoy the melodies, enjoy the music. It's very danceable. But when you dig into the lyrics, you see that this is a song about being cheated on, and what the "but it's all right" is all about is karma. Like, yo, you cheated on me, but it's all right. Karma is going to come back and get you. You reap what you sow. And I think that makes this song so much cooler. The fact that this seems like a experience, at least in his delivery. It's an awesome delivery from him. It feels real. And that he experienced this. And I imagine him in the studio with these awesome players. By the way, this was the first. What was the claim?
It was one of the first R&B songs to be recorded in England.
In England. So
yeah, he moved out to England. He flew to England to record just this song. The right. rest of the album was recorded in New York, but this song was in New England.
New England.
And then, England. No, sorry, in England, England. In old England.
Old England.
R.I.P. the
Queen.
Under
Elizabeth II.
But, but then by like, I think it was like by 72, he just moved there permanently. Like he just took up a permanent residence in England.
I don't blame him. He went there during, you know, Vietnam was going on, whatever. Like yeah. I'd have maybe been there too.
Well, also in England, there was a huge 60s soul revival in the 70s of kids in England were in, especially in the north of England, were listening to artists like J.J. Jackson and a lot of other like forgotten hits like Motown singles that people had thrown away. It was this whole movement called Northern Soul, and kids would like take amphetamines, like kids like Mods, The Who. They would go and dance in these warehouses to these forgotten songs that they could find in America. And I'm thinking maybe he stayed there because maybe
it was probably more lucrative to be
way more.
That,
yeah, he was probably getting paid for performances.
Wow.
Over there. Yeah. That's I mean, they were listening. Oh, it's one of my favorite things that I found in my research as a DJ was Northern Soul and Carolina Beach music, like two like pockets of the world where like they would listen to the 60s soul and like dig for forgotten or unreleased. Like the more obscure records that you had, the better a DJ you were in these scenes. It was just really cool.
Man, that's awesome. Maybe he just went to where the demand was.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. Something funny that we didn't touch on yet. J.J. Jackson was a big dude. And
yeah.
He was so big, in fact, that for some reason he felt it necessary to list his weight in the liner notes. he was 285 pounds, and he was proud of it. And that is a recurring theme in some of his other music. But I thought it was pretty funny that he listed his weight in the liner notes.
That is interesting.
It was like his version of the Rage Against the Machine liner notes. It's like, just so you know, all this music was created by just a guitar, a bass, and a drum.
Yeah.
JJ was like, just so you know, this song was sung by a 285-pound man.
Yeah.
there's a really awesome video. Anyone who's watching this can look it up. It's one of the first things that comes up on YouTube when you search for JJ Jackson. It's all right. Is a video of him, black and white. There's sort of a dance to this song, and it could just be a generic kind of dance that people were doing to all of this style, but it seems pretty specific to this song. But it's him, and he's in front, he's doing the dance, and he's lip-syncing along to the song. But then behind him, it's just all a bunch of, it looks like what those beach movies with...
Yeah, like the Annette Funicello.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like the beach bingo stuff.
Beach blanket bingo, yep.
Yeah, and it's pretty great. It's pretty awesome. It actually made me stand up and go like, hey, I want to make sure I can do this dance if I had to do this dance, and I got up and did it for a little while. And yes, you see that J.J. Jackson's a big dude. And when I dove more into his music, I came across a song from J.J. Jackson and the Greatest Little Soul Band in the Land. And the song was called Fat, Black, and Together. And the song is all about body positivity and being confident in yourself regardless. And I just thought it was so badass. I had some of the lyrics down and I just thought they were awesome. It was, some will say there's no joy in messing around with a fat boy, but the ladies know the truth is light because a fat boy keeps them warm at night. Yes, the girls get a whole lot of hugging when they're with this tub full of loving, and I ain't heard no complaining because I am. Yes, I am. And I love this part because he does this like, he does a laugh that's just, you can't even imitate it. It's so good. You know how like people can do that, can pull that off? He said,
yeah.
Cause I am, yes I am, laughs, fat, black, and together. And I just think it's like, it's such a jam. It's such a good song. So body positive and so much fun.
And it's quite a leap from, I mean, one of the early rock and roll songs, Fats Domino, his first single was The Fat Man, where he's like, they called me the fat man because I weigh 200 pounds. And he's clearly taken that a little bit and gone a little wider with it.
So he's a regular like J.J. Lizzo out there, just like repping. Like, I love that. That's awesome. Let's talk about when this song hit the charts real quick. So this song peaked at 22 on December 9th, 1966. Because it's kind of an older song, the thing I've learned with looking at the charts in the 60s is there are a lot of songs that were like top five hits that most people, if you played them the song, would be like, I've never heard this song in my entire life. But the noteworthy ones, the ones that I think most people know, Frank Sinatra's That's Life was at number 10 on the charts at that point. The Supremes' You Keep Me Hanging On was at number 5. Devon's Mellow Yellow Donovan's Mellow Yellow was at number 2, and the number 1 song was the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations.
That explains the bikini-clad dancers in the background.
Yeah, it does. Good call.
Beach Boys were still at the height of their popularity.
Yeah.
It feels like he also, I'm not sure if you guys caught this when you're doing the research, it seems like this single hit, and it took them a little bit to get the actual album out. And then pretty much from the time the album came out, it felt like he was just getting passed from label to label with no one really putting much effort into it. Because he also kind of just, before he started doing the 90s stuff, he kind of just walked away from playing music entirely by like 75.
Yeah.
His last song that I came, his last single anyway, that I came across, that from 1975, is called Let Me Try Again. And it felt borderline disco. And yeah. I liked it. It was cool, but that may have been it. He may have been like, you know what? I'm not going to try to do this. this isn't my thing. That's what I would guess happened.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting because he seemed like he was riding the waves. And by the time they finally got, you know, their shit together and got this on an album, it had already been a charted single, I think, twice by that point before. So, I mean, the thing with the soul in the 60s is most of the time they were focused on singles. I mean, they really weren't. There's very few. If you look at, like, best albums of, you know, whatever time, soul albums were not really the focus. They were just a collection of singles. You know, it wasn't really till the Beatles and the Beach Boys started actually focusing on like albums and cohesiveness. And then you listen to like what comes after this album was released. He went straight into like the jazz rock fusion. He did a cover of Chicago's.
Yeah.
Do you really know what time it is?
Yeah.
I think there was just like stuff that's like completely a turn. So, I mean, he was sticking with the times, but I don't know that necessarily his like maybe Wilson Pickett-esque voice was really suited for, you know, the shift to disco and stuff like that. So maybe it just kind of got phased out stylistically.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are The Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code 150 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code 150, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
That cover that AJ just brought up of Does Anybody Really Know What Time It is awesome. And it's from his project, which at that point was called J.J. Jackson's Dilemma. And for lack of a better way to put it, it felt very Vietnam era music. It is badass. He has a song on there called Bow Down to the Dollar. And it is just, it's great. You know, it's awesome. And it's a song that's a social commentary on exactly what the title is. And I think it's really cool. Like, this guy was way more than just, he was a songwriter. He had an awesome delivery, but he didn't just get stuck making, you know, a bubblegum pop hit, which to a certain extent you could call It's All Right. But knowing that there was what I believe real feeling behind that song and diving into more than just the sound of the song. Yeah, I think this guy has been the real deal from the start. In the song, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but there's a really awesome, like halfway through the song, a lead on the bells. Someone plays like a bells solo in this song, and it is awesome. And then there's an awesome modulation after that. I mean, there's a lot more going on. He had some of the best jazz musicians in England playing on this song, because once again, yeah, I think of this as a little bit of like a bubblegummy pop hit from that time.
This is a wedding song in a weird way, as much as it's a song about wanting karmic revenge on the girl who cheated on you. This is a song where it's like I could hear this song playing in the dance floor filling up at a wedding, 100%.
Yeah. And I have played it at weddings and it, like as as part of cocktail hour, along with other fun soul bell songs, like James and Bobby Purify, like I'm Your Puppet, which has like some cool bells in it and stuff.
I love that song.
Oh, you gotta come to one of my cocktail hours at a wedding. Then. You'll hear it all. The original, Some Kind of Wonderful. Why not? But no, it does. It fits in there so well, and it is. It's just a good. It's just uplifting dance. Like, even when that video that Chris is referencing, I mean, he is smiling ear to ear, having a great time, even though the subject matter is maybe a little sad.
Heartbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that juxtaposition of, you know, the. If you dive in deeper, the lyrics are really sad, but he's delivering them with this big smile on his face. And I think that's so cool to take being hurt and turn it into something so positive. I love that. It's like one of my favorite.
That's literal art.
Yes. Yes. I love it. Hey, I got to bring up, I know I'm bouncing all over the place, but I really dug into his music today. I really listened to, he had a big list of singles. I think I listened to all of them. There was one other song that I wanted to bring up that I thought was pretty funny. He has a song called I Dig Girls.
Yes.
You know that one?
Yeah. It starts off with the theme from Dragnet.
Yeah, I knew it was something. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. Yeah, it's funny because, yeah, the Boogaloo Baby starts off and it sounds like Marvin Gaye. And then this other single, it literally takes, except for. Yep, exactly. And I think they just changed the last note, the last hit. It might be off a little bit key wise. And then they go into the song. But it is. It's funny. So he takes all these things that he sees around him, at least from my observation as a songwriter, and like puts them in like little references to other pop culture things, the Motown movement, Dragnet, and try to make, but yeah, the I Dig Girls is great.
I mean, I Dig Girls, I liked it so much, and here's what's funny. I was cracking up at like the words to it, which, you know, he delivers them in his way and it's awesome. But I wanted to pull up the lyrics and I couldn't find them, so I had to sit there and transcribe them just so I could read them on the podcast. The lyrics are, I dig girls, yes, I dig girls, big or small, short or tall, I dig them all. I dig girls back on the farm or in the city, in any old town, they're sure pretty. Doing a dance or baking a cake, riding or walking, they're simply great. I dig girls. I dig girls on the beach or in the park or at the movies where it's dark. Teaching them, making them laugh or cry, watching them wiggle as they walk by, which I think this is such a funny song, man. He really wants to know people. He really wants to let people know he digs girls, and I believe him.
in a very like Theodore Geisel, Dr. Seuss way, like he turned that was a children's book the way you read that, Chris.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see the pages turning.
It's like, it's literally like, it's like proto Mambo Number 5 or like. It's the other one. It's like Hose in Different Area Codes by Ludacris. Like
just listing off like songs that list things.
You almost feel there is a lot of stuff that we're talking about with this where it's like you almost think that J.J. Jackson should be someone that is like more prevalent to hip hop history, because it feels like he's covering a lot of ground that you think of, especially like 90s hip hop. Like the way you're describing, like, big guy talking about his, you know, how good of a lover he is and stuff like that. Like, this is like early Notorious B.I.G. lyrics. Like, you know,
Biggie,
what I mean?
Fat Joe, Big Pun.
I think that is very accurate. I thought that when I heard Fat Black and Together from J.J. Jackson and the Greatest Little Soul Band in the Land. When I heard that, I'm like, this is the blueprint for, you know, big guys being confident in who they are and being proud of it. You know, I think it's really cool. I mean, I don't know if he's the originator, but he's definitely the earliest that I've come in con. I mean, I don't know.
There's Fats Domino.
Yeah, Fats Domino. Right.
But I can't think of anybody before Fats.
Did you guys check out any of the covers of But It's All Right?
Oh, yeah. I guess I knew the Huey Lewis one. I definitely did.
Yeah, that's from his all 50s and 60s cover album, which I think was called A Few Chords and Several Years Ago.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He does it great. I think he does a really good job, almost to the point where it's verbatim the original. Now, he doesn't get as animated, but he definitely has, like, the tone of the song down. I wouldn't have been surprised if this was just a Huey Lewis song, if I wouldn't have known about J.J. Jackson. Also, Redbone did it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Redbone did a good job with it.
Eddie Floyd
was the other one I had written down. Yeah. And he did. So, yes, this was one of the singles they released for that album. I wanted to check to see. So some of the songs that they covered on this album, I'm not going to read all of them, but they did Shake, Rattle, and Roll. They did She's Some Kind of Wonderful, But It's All Right. Little Itty Bitty One.
That was
probably the biggest single. And Stagger Lee, which is a song that I want to cover on this show one day. Yes. I have to double check to see if Lloyd Pierce had any other singles, but that song is a...
Lloyd Price had, Personality was probably a big one.
Gotcha, that's right. So that's why we can't do it. But yeah, Stagger Lee is a great, like, when you're talking about, like, obscure to a certain point, like, I don't think people know that song too well, but it has such a driving beat that if you played it at a wedding, people would dance to it because it's so easy to dance to.
Well, when I play acoustic shows, I often include that in what I call my troublemaker set. So I'll play Stagger Lee. I'll play Bad Bad Leroy Brown by Jim Croce. Mean Julio Down by the Schoolyard. Like songs about people like getting into trouble or like witnessing a murder.
Yeah.
Dude, I got to tell you guys something real quick. I was looking up something while you guys were talking. And on J.J. Jackson's Wikipedia, no wonder I thought he died in 1982. It says, literally says on his Wikipedia, died 1982. it says born November 8th, 1942. In parentheses, it says age 79, Bronx, New York. And below that, it says died 1982. And then below that, it says years active 1957 to 2004. So somewhere along the line.
Wow.
He was active for 22 years after his death, according to to the J.J. Jackson Wikipedia.
He probably owed money for taxes or something, because we know how, you know, all those 60s artists got in trouble. But I think that's probably what it was. He died, didn't want to pay taxes, and then like they came after him. He's like, all right, I guess I'm alive. I'll do these reunion tours.
Also, things are getting messed up left and right. J.J. Jackson's SEO got all messed up by the J.J. Jackson VJ that we mentioned earlier, who was one of the original MTV VJs. He was also J.J. Jackson. And as far as I know, he also didn't die, I think.
No, he didn't.
No, the VJ J.J. Jackson did die in 2004.
Oh. Mm.
Wow. Not 1982, though, so we still have no explanation.
Nobody died
for this
in 1982.
some guy just didn't know what he was doing. He was typing on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That's what that. We'll have to contest that.
Oh, man. A lot of death at the end of this episode for some reason. But
so sad.
But J.J. Jackson's still alive and kicking as far as we know.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm so
JJ,
happy.
If you hear this, let us know.
JJ, if you're alive, let us know and get someone to fix your Wikipedia page.
Yes.
How do we feel about J.J. Jackson? Thunder or blunder? AJ.
Honestly, I like a lot of his stuff. It is clear that this is the standout track. I do think he had some great stuff. I think, unfortunately, I think he gets blurred just based on the fact that his style is similar to a couple other just phenomenal performers of the time, like Wilson Pickett and James Brown and some other, you know, like you said, belters. I think he's thunder.
Yeah.
I think he's thunder.
I'm gonna agree with that. Everything that I heard by him, I was like, this is great. Like, I'm just having a good time with it. I do agree that But It's All Right is the most famous song for a reason from him, but given that, like, just 2 weeks ago we were talking about Desiree, where like half of the stuff that we listened to was borderline unlistenable by her, like, JJ Jackson had enough good songs that he shouldn't have been a one-hit wonder is my takeaway from this.
And it's a shame because, like, you can't, it's, I don't know about you guys, but like most of my research was not able to be done on like regular streaming platforms. I mean, I was digging into YouTube rips of like 7-inch singles and stuff. So he is still mostly forgotten, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that I was looking up on YouTube was literally someone filming their turntable. Like, and just recording the audio of the actual record. And, hey, I agree. I think this is thunder. I think from the second that this guy steps up to the mic, it is pure thunder coming out of his mouth. You can't replicate that. You can't fake that. He's awesome. And I think he tried. You know, one of my things I give people blunders for a lot of times is like, oh, we had a hit, and then it didn't happen the next second, the next single wasn't a hit, and then they dropped off the face of the earth. Quitters. I call them quitters because I think that's what they are. It's such a rare thing to have a hit song that you got to nurture that and keep trying, in my opinion, anyway. And this guy really tried. This song first hit in whatever, 66, 67, and then it was up till 1975, and I think just the musical landscape was changing, and I think he tried and was like, you know what? This isn't work. Like, it just wasn't working for him. Like you guys brought up, he went and did the tours that were celebrating that music of that era after the fact. He knew where he fit in, and he did what he could in that world. And I think he's thunderous.
Yeah. AJ, real quick. I know you do a lot of online DJ work. You're very much more localized to the Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey range. But if people want to see you doing your quizzos, doing your DJ stuff, or even just listen to some of your mixtapes, where's the best way for them to catch up on all that stuff?
Sure. I mean, if you find me somewhere on Facebook or Instagram, DJ AJ Santini is the best way to look for it. I have mixes on Mixcloud, which is like a, you know, platform for DJs to share their mixes without a lot of copyright nonsense. So mixcloud.com/DJ AJ Santini, or, you know, if you're in the Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, or Newtown Square, Pennsylvania area, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I host Quizzos, which is just bar trivia. It's the way that we say bar trivia. It's a lot of fun. It's you know, I also do something called the Music Appreciation Society, where I make like mixtapes that are focused kind of on different styles of music every day. And it's made to sound like a cassette tape with the different, you know, like the turning over of the cassette tape sounds and everything mixed in there with like 45 minutes aside. So just like a retro thing. But I DJ a lot of, I'm starting to DJ some more vinyl stuff too, like with like JJ Jackson, this Northern Soul, Carolina Beach music, just fun, forgotten stuff that unfortunately has fell through the cracks. And I'm trying to just keep it alive a little bit in my own way.
Nice. All right.
Love it. Thanks for coming on, AJ.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How have you ever felt like you've been solo? The way you're staring out a window,
waiting to be taken away. This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Vefalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing the Punchline song Friend from the Future off their album Lion. Visit punchlion.com for merch, tour dates, and news. We're on Patreon now. Become a patron and get some bonus content, early episode releases, and a chance to vote for a future episode at patreon.com/OHTpodcast. Do you want to start a podcast? Contact Chris and myself at weknowpodcasting.com for how we can make your show sound as professional as possible. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app, and tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder. Say things like, man, I'm so old. So your age has bringing you down.
Geekscape Network.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.